Well, Swain, we're up and away. Good to have you online.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Yeah, it's been some hustling around, talking to some cool people, and I'm pretty pumped, actually, to get this underway. I had a bit of a day, actually. So, like, I hope my brain is still functioning properly, but yeah, all good.
I guess, should we explain what this is? I know we've sort of talked about it. Well, I've sort of talked about it to a few people. And people who have signed up, welcome, because this is for you guys. You know, it is for you and I too, Swain. Very much of this whole creation of this membership and even this podcast series was out of a phone call or a message or a voice note, which we like doing, is just going, how do we do more stuff together? And I was like, well, I think because you live in, you know, BC, how do we do more stuff when you're on the other side of the world and I'm in Australia? Because I get the feeling since we've retired, a big part of our relationship was because we worked together, you got to see each other more. And now that you're on the other side of the world, it's like we get voice notes every so often. I'm pretty bad with that. And I was like, maybe we should do a podcast. It's the only thing I can really think of that's going to keep us, you know, interacting more and more and more, which is great at the moment. And that's where it sort of formulated from, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, I think, you know, I used to put a smile on my face when I'd get the old the race list and I'd see Mitch's name on there. And yeah, I knew it was, even if it was the shittiest race on the planet, I knew we were going to have a good time. So yeah, for me, it's that same thing. It's like reconnecting in a way. But again, like talking about things that I think are really like interesting to a lot of people. And if they're still interesting to us and we were there and the sport is evolving so much. So it's like two things we get to do together that like I think contribute to something really good. So
the best part is, you know, for you guys, it is unfiltered, no ads, and we're just going to be able to tell some stories. Swain's got a truckload full, you know, a tip truck full. I've got a little minivan of a couple of stories as well. But I think the thing that I always remember the best part about when we were together was just that, I wouldn't say we're always conflicting, but there was always that good amount of sort of challenging question, or from my side anyway, asking and trying to understand what we're talking about with those certain topics we talk about. I was always learning from you. And you know, I hope that there was something I was able to pass on from me to you as a younger version, you know, just looking at things a little differently. That's what I loved about our relationship and our conversations. And Luke Durbridge too, he was in on a lot of those as well, that triangle where we sort of just used to question each other and have a laugh about what we were all doing at certain points.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, it's that all those different kind of generations, right? And none of us are right or wrong, but like that ability to have the discussion is super important. And that was something I also missed in that world too, because I felt like we had something really special, and that wasn't always the case when you dealt with a lot of other riders and teams and organizations. It was very like much blinders on and not really looking outside of the box. And I always loved that about, you know, you guys. We would have these like really interesting conversations and it wasn't the norm. Let's just put it that way in that world. It's very like kind of regimented and guys aren't really thinking about much else is how I'll put it.
Let's introduce you, because in case anyone hasn't heard of you or your podcast, or even when we were together on the podcast, I don't know where you've been, but let's just give us a quick background, Swaino. I guess where you sort of grew up, you know, and this is, it's a big question because there's so much to unpack, which we're going to do in this series, but just to bring everyone up to speed, where you are now, where you sort of came through the ranks, give us a little up to speed of Swaino.
It's hard to condense really quickly, but I'll do my best. I grew up here in Canada, in British Columbia, out on the West Coast. So we're, yeah, kind of Pacific Ocean. Oz is just across the Pacific, just a quick jump over there. Beautiful part of the world. Very lucky to have grown up here. But, you know, as a young man, I kind of lost my way a bit. I was a bit all over the shop and I was trying to find, you know, just who the hell I was. I dropped out of school in grade 10 and I started climbing. In that process of climbing, it brought me to, well, it was really just down to expenses. I had no money. I'd work some shitty jobs and, you know, hay baling in the summer and construction, this and that, working at gas stations and yeah, I mean, go down the gambit of shitty jobs that I did them. I realized like, yeah, trying to get out because mountain climbing, okay, it's not the most expensive thing, but like gear and then trying to get out to the mountains is like this constant cost. And I hated that. And that's what kind of brought me to bikes. And I bought my first like 10-speed at a crappy secondhand store and welded up a trailer, threw the dog in there, threw all my equipment, started my first expeditions. And in that process, it was crazy because I always loved climbing mountains, but the bike took me. Like from that point, I just fell in love with everything about that freedom.
Why don't we just talk a little bit about our first episode that we've gone away and recorded, and we've sort of, the whole idea was how to make it, pretty much. How to make it pro. Because we were discussing this at some point. We were just sort of entertaining the idea. We were laughing about how do these guys make it these days? And then either one of us threw the question. I was like, well, how did you actually make it? And there was a moment where we both paused and sort of thought, well, how did we make it? Because it seems really hard. Like, I get a lot of people asking me this question, Mitch, what's the secret? What's the secret sauce to making it pro? I don't really have the answer straight off the top of my head. And then when I try and think back on my own career, I'm like, what was the secret sauce for me? How did I actually make that step? Let's get into it. Sit back, guys. Enjoy the ride. Listen and learn.
For a lot of guys, it's just getting the chances to race. In my opinion, there's three ways you can do it. And why I think I was kind of unique to write the book that I did is that I think I'm the only person that's actually lived all three of them, because most people, they go over and they live one of these three options, and either they make it and they go pro and they're like, yeah, it worked great. Or they try one way and it doesn't work. And then they go home after 1 year and then they just say, Europe sucks, it's hard, all this kind of stuff. But I kind of started in one and phased into the next one. And so the three categories, as far as I look at it, is the under 23 option. And for that, you need to be, your race age needs to be 20 or younger. And with modern cycling, like changing around, let's say 2019, I think cycling has changed so much more where now if you're 20 or younger, you have more opportunities and more resources than ever. And a lot of the barriers around getting to Europe have been broken down because the World Tour teams are investing so much money into their scouting teams and their development teams, like way more than ever before.
You know, I think the racing scene was so good back in the 80s when I was a junior. And then in the 90s, it was quite healthy, you know, when I signed up a Subaru and then went to Coors Light and Saturn. You know, there was a bunch of really good teams during that period. You had Motorola racing over in Europe. And so there was a really good scene back then and a really strong group of teams and a lot of opportunity for good, you know, talented young riders. And the U.S. scene was just really healthy back then because have all the pro teams in North America did the full North American program. So if you went to Redlands or if you went to even the Criteriums, were just stacked with all the pro teams. So if there was eight pro teams in America or at any given time, all eight would line up with eight guys each at all the different crits and different stage races. So it was a bit of a different time back then.
There's obviously talent, which is a broad sort of a statement, but you know, where in this rider's journey, how much room have they got to move? So yeah, there's kids who are already tapped out at a certain age, or there's kids that, you know, we also look into, well, okay, this kid's 19, 20 years old, but he finished study 2 years ago. He's been racing, he's been taking cycling serious for 1 year, 3 years. Or there's a difference between a 17, 18-year-old kid who's been training with a professional coach since he was 12 years old. The game has changed, but we certainly are looking at younger athletes, a lot younger than we ever have been. And then obviously we've got data and things we can compare these kids to where, or these younger riders to where our guys were at the same age, which gives us a good bit of background on them. Then obviously their skill set, if we're looking for certain skill sets, and their ability to race and ride in the bunch. There's a lot of data floating around, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be an efficient bike rider.
I mean, data, of course, it's super important, especially these days with VO2 and stuff. That's just one little facet of the whole wheel, for example. You know, it's also the way they are used to handle their bike. Positioning, super important. How many hours did they train as a youth 17? All of those things. Mm. And then that's something you all pick together. And then again, you're also competing against 17 other World Tour teams. So it's not like, okay, it's not so hard to find the best under 23 talent out there and give them a contract. It's also like, what's their growth margin, you know? And so yeah, data is, of course, it's important, but there's a whole, you know, there are more facets.
It all happened really, really fast, going from a runner and then to cycling and then racing domestically in Australia, and then I just happened to win my first European bike race, and then I was all of a sudden in the World Tour getting thrown around in a sport that I didn't really understand. Like, I didn't really understand cycling at a domestic level, let alone at a world tour level. I think the moment I really realized how out of depth I was in my first world tour stage race at the Tour Down Under. You were actually there. My role was to look after Michael Woods up the Corkscrew, and we have that run into the gorge, and I was last wheel in the peloton. I was basically in the cars, and I realized then that I had a lot to learn on and off the bike, the technical skills. Yeah, just having the balls to throw your bike around and get used to the hecticness of racing.
Yeah, I guess I'll start off with, I had a great successful junior career, some national championships, did the world championships, came out of it, joined the US team, a Volo, a little arrogant maybe and naive to how much the pro levels were, kind of got my butt kicked, but then did Tour Avenir and was doing it with Matteo Jorgensen, and he'd done the whole French amateur scene that whole year, and I thought I'd try and hop on board that experience. And then 2020, joined a French amateur team, only got so much racing there, so just kind of a year of just riding my bike, trying to figure my way out through the pandemic. So that was kind of a big leap over to Europe, but nothing really came up of it. Then the following year, 2021, I was with the same French amateur team, and I had some good results and everything, things were going well. Yeah, it was just tough, constant fight with health issues, whatnot, and not finishing a race and then being told, all right, you're just not good enough to be here in Europe. That was brutal. And then having serious health issues again. And after that, it was kind of a tough thing to come back home and be told, hey, you're not good enough by your director.
Well, just a cheeky snippet for you guys there. The Life in the Peloton Chronicles is up and live. So cool to have that first episode out. I wanted to give you guys a little taste of what we're doing over at the Pelo, the new membership, the Life in the Peloton Club. If you're not a member and you do like what you hear there, you've got to sign up to hear that episode. It is a massive episode. And that's what we're going for in the Chronicles. It's 2.5 hours. Sit back and enjoy it. The episodes are going to be long like that. They could be an hour, they could be 2.5, they could be 3, because what we're going to do over there, like I said, is that freedom to have a bit of free speech, tell some long yarns with Swain, with different guests. In that episode, we spoke to heaps of different people, Jack Burke, Jonas Carney, Matt White, Sebastian Langeveld, Jimmy Whelan, and Riley Sheehan. They're some of the voices you heard there, plus Swaino and I unpacking what we heard and putting our thoughts across about that topic, making it to World Tour. If you haven't read about the Life in the Peloton Chronicles or the Pelo membership, go across to lifeinthepeloton.com, check it out. Be sure to sign up either for the Echelon, which is the top tier, or the Doom line as well. They're both excellent programs with a whole lot more stuff. We've got the Life in the Peloton book coming out in April, which is part of the Echelon membership. You will get a limited edition book, Life in the Peloton book, written by myself and Tom Southam. That's going to be coming to you. Plus, we've got this exciting new Pelo kit coming out, produced by our partners, MAP. That is going to be exclusive only for Pelo members. And I can tell you firsthand, it is sick. It's a really cool kit. There's other stuff too. There's special discounts from my partners, which you guys are going to be able to access as well and get yourself a whole heap of stuff at a really good price. Plus, you're just going to be in the club, get your own individual number, and we're going to be building on that. Lots more stuff to come for the Pelo members. Be sure to sign up. I love to have you on board. The Life in the Peloton Chronicles is for you guys. So, guys, if you haven't signed up, go across, check it out, and I'll see you there in the Echelon, or if you're hanging on, back in the Doom line.